DiscerningHearts.com presents Regnum Novum, bringing forth the new evangelization through Catholic social teaching with Omar Gutierrez. Omar Gutierrez is the special assistant to the Archbishop of Omaha, as well as the manager of the Office of Missions and Justice. He's had numerous articles published in various Catholic publications and is a highly sought-after speaker on various aspects of Catholic social teaching. Regnum Novum, bringing forth the new evangelization through Catholic social teaching with Omar Gutierrez. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Welcome, Omar.
Thanks, Chris. Good to be back.
The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops recently have let out a clarion call to all Catholics to be very cautious, very aware of the loss of religious liberty. For the record, our discussion is based on the actions of the state. We are not looking at political parties.
Exactly.
We're not looking at those type of ideologies that they might purport. We're looking at current actions, decisions that are being made, how they are reflected or dulled in some cases from the shine of Catholic social teaching.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. That's an important point. And in fact, actually, both parties are guilty of some of these situations.
So we're looking at primarily, in its very essence, the fruit of certain decisions that are being made.
Yeah.
One of those fruits is that comes from a decision by the Health and Human Services. It regards the funding of contraceptive services under what has been called the Obama health care plan.
Right. This becomes a little bit complicated, but we're going to try to unpack this and make this more accessible. When the Obama health care plan, or commonly known as Obamacare, was passed, it gave the Secretary of Health and Human Services enormous power. One of those powers was to mandate that private insurance companies cover certain procedures. And the hope here was a good hope. It was a good intention, and the hope was, for the sake of the common good, that you cover certain preventive services so you're not dealing with worse situations later through the health care, which makes a lot of sense. However, what they consider preventive services don't always mesh with reality or with certain medical studies or certainly with the teaching of the Catholic Church. And in this case, they required, in a rule that they sort of sent up there in August of 2011, they provided a rule saying that private insurance companies had to cover preventive services for women that included artificial contraception, hormone-based contraceptives, and sterilization. And so why would that be a problem? Well, obviously, you know, the Church's position on contraception is firm against that, but it's not just about contraception. As many know, hopefully, hormone-based contraceptives are carcinogens. The World Health Organization recognizes that there are links between them and breast and cervical cancer in women. But beyond that, they also make it impossible or make it more difficult for fertilized eggs, that is, a pregnant woman's fertilized egg, from implanting in the lining of her uterine wall, which therefore ends up being expelled in her next period. So they're called abortifacients. In fact, one of these drugs, Ella is called, has almost the exact same drug hormone makeup as RU4D6, or the morning after pill, or the abortion pill. These are abortifacients that are being covered. And then, of course, sterilization goes against the Church's teaching as well, and is a significant operation. So now these private insurance companies are being required to cover this. Now, why is this a problem? Well, the problem is that Catholic institutions and Catholic individuals, Catholic business owners, we can't forget that, are being asked to pay the premiums, because there is no copay in this at all. The burden is entirely on the insurance company, so therefore covered through the premiums. Catholic institutions and business owners are asked to pay the premiums for these procedures. In other words, the Catholic Church and Catholic individuals are being asked to violate their own conscientious objection to these kinds of procedures by paying for them for their employees.
To help articulate those who are in the public square, whether we're in our workplace, whether we're in a gathering with family or something like to that nature, is one of the purposes of this discussion that we're having right now.
Yeah.
So we need to go back to even beyond the religious dynamics of this, because sometimes in discussions, people will just look at you and say, well, that's a religious issue. You
yeah.
need to separate that out. You're trying
right.
to tell me what to do. It goes back to those things that we can reason through and that we can say, even beyond religion, when does life begin?
Yeah.
It gets as yeah. fundamental as that.
Yes, good point.
So to say that to fund something that would kill what some would say a fertilized eggs, others would say a human being.
Yeah, it's a human being. I mean, even the science here is clear. I mean, this is the thing that gets so very frustrating sometimes, is science is on our side here. What is that? That thing inside the woman's womb is a human being. It is a member of the species Homo sapiens sapiens. It is has the same DNA as every single other human being that has ever existed in the history of humankind. It is a human being. Punto. There's no denying that. Every book of embryology will say that. They try to get around that argument by saying, well, it's not a human being until it's implanted in the woman's uterine wall. That's an equivocation. And it's basing beingness on function and not on being, which is a philosophical category you just can't do. So it's a human being. And so we are talking about abortion here. This is what's being done. The president, who before he became president promised that he would have federal funds and force people to fund abortion, is really sort of paying on that promise. What Catholic institutions are being asked to do is pay for the abortions of their employees.
Yeah, and verbiage is very important for everyone out there, because
yeah.
contraception, this is a contraception plan. Well, guess what? Contra means prevents conception. We're now talking about funding what happens after conception.
Exactly.
A conception has occurred. What has been conceived? A human person. A human person is now being aborted from the body.
That's right.
And what is being asked of the insurance companies, i.e. those who pay into the insurance company and fund this, i.e. you and me,
yeah.
that we provide money so that those abortions could occur.
That's right. That's right. So then the next question ends up becoming, why is this a problem? Because it's a violation of conscience. And conscience is, like, even if you're left or right, Republican or Democratic, we all recognize that there's something sacrosanct about our conscience. You take the beautiful, beautiful play that became a movie, A Man for All Seasons, about the story of St. Thomas More. That wasn't written by a Catholic. It was written by an atheist who understood the importance of conscience. That conscience is sacrosanct, important for us. And so we need to understand that this is not just a Catholic issue. This should be everybody's issue and something that we ought to be taking to the water cooler at work and to our conversations everywhere.
And when you're in the area of whether it's contraception or terminating an unwanted pregnancy,
yeah.
you know, and all this kind of, those are areas that we've debated for decades now,
yeah.
and it can be very touchy. And so we tend to avoid it, and we don't want to think about it. And we want to say, well, I'm not going to use the monies from my plan to use this particular abortifacient type of contraception.
Right.
So why should I care if the person next to me does? It's none of my business.
Yeah, the problem with that argument is twofold. One, it violates the principle of solidarity, which we've talked about here on Regnum Novum before. Mm-hmm. What solidarity is, according to John Paul II, is the notion that you have a firm and determined commitment to the common good. But why? John Paul II says, because we are all really responsible for all. It is our business. When somebody hurts or kills or violates the natural law by destroying the life of another innocent human person, you know what? That is our business. That is our responsibility. We have an obligation to do and say something about it and to work against it. So that's the first reason why it doesn't work. The second reason why it doesn't work is because the difference here is not just the matter of free choices. You know, those who are defending this position, even unfortunately some Catholics who are defending this position by the Obama administration, they're arguing that, well, all that's being asked of the Catholic Church is that they provide the freedom to their employees, the ability for them to choose or not choose, they say, this procedure. So what's the problem? It's not just about choice here. It's not just that my neighbor is deciding to do something that's not really my business. It's that the Church and Catholic individuals are being forced to pay for it. That's the difference. The state is requiring, and with the individual mandate that's part of this Obamacare, that is, you don't even have a choice not to have insurance. So not only do you have to have health insurance, you have to have a plan that covers this, and so I have to pay premiums as an employer, as an individual, if I get it for myself, that would cover this procedure. This is a complete violation, an overstepping of the power of the state, and violates any number of various principles of the social teaching, not the least of which, right, is the common good and the principle of subsidiarity.
Principles are so important.
Yeah.
Because to give an example to someone why this is a problem, if I belong to a particular group and I am asked to put money into that pool of people, the others in that pool could draw from that money and purchase a gun and use it to shoot the spouse they no longer want to live with. I, knowing that behavior could occur, I'm not going to give money. If I give money for the purchase of those guns, then I'm involved when what they will be used for, especially if I know that that's what they're going to be used for.
And especially if that pool that you're putting your money into says specifically, hey, it's okay for you to shoot your wife with a gun. There's the difference there, is that I'm putting money into a pool that doesn't just allow it to happen, but says, it's okay. It's okay for you to take a gun and shoot your wife with it. Why would you give money into that? That's a violation of your conscience. And now the state is saying, you have to put money into that pool. And we're also saying it's okay to shoot your wife with that gun. That's the violation.
And that may seem like an extreme example, but is it really? Because what we're saying is that I'm putting money in a pool where a woman, a mother, could take a substance that will kill the child that's been conceived in her womb.
That's right. That's right. That the effect is the same. Now, you know, we want to be charitable here and recognize that most of these women don't know this. They don't know their own biology in a lot of cases. They haven't been informed about this. So many of them are not culpable for any of this because they really don't know. They don't even know how their bodies work necessarily. And so they're not aware of what's happening. The term abortifacient doesn't even register with them. However, this is the fact. This is reality, and we're not judging these poor women who are involved in this, but what's clear is the truth. What's clear is what the scientific facts are, and the scientific facts are this is what's happening when women take these pills, these drugs, and also, by the way, again, as I said before, they subject themselves to greater risks for cancer.
We say that we know that there's a realm visible and invisible, mm-hmm. and for the Catholic in that invisible realm is that very presence of evil,
yeah.
and its influence in the world. And one of its key methods is confusion, division, deception.
Yeah.
And so articulating clearly what happens in having integrity in our terms
yeah.
is vital
yes.
for discernment and for that conscience to be able to be expressed out. To say that, well, I didn't realize, or I have ignorance, or I desire to remain ignorant, is a very challenge to that gift of faith, that revelation that God continues to pour out on us. And that's the challenge that the bishops are trying to undertake in their calling out, stop, wait, do you realize the slope we're slipping down?
Exactly. And that, I think we should take time to thank our bishops here for just a minute. I mean, they saw this problem coming. They're very aware of it. They put a special subcommittee together in order to try to address these issues, and they have been remarkably open and loud and vocal about how this particular rule, but also how these examples around the country, these attacks against our religious liberty, how this is affecting us as Catholics. And so, yes, you're right, this obligation we have to try to educate ourselves and our neighbors about the reality of what's going on, even if it is blunt terminology we're using, it's the truth. And the thing that the Holy Father, Pope Benedict XVI, and John Paul II have said repeatedly And it's part of our presentation here on Regnum Novum, particularly on our episode with Truth and Freedom, is that you can talk about freedom, but freedom is sometimes meaningless and even a danger if you don't have the truth. Truth and freedom are like two sisters. You can't separate them. You have to have both of them together because they both bring to the table a beauty that can only be appreciated in its fullness if you have them both there. And freedom, as we've said before, authentic freedom is freedom for the truth. Freedom for the truth. And truth can only flourish unless you have the freedom to cry it from the mountaintops. So we're talking about truth here so that we can get to an authentic freedom, a freedom as Catholic citizens, as freedom as Americans.
Now, in that discussion of how evil operates, it should be stated very clearly that the enemy is not the politician.
Yeah.
It's the thought. It's the influence. And the presumption of the Christian is that they do not realize what they're doing.
Yeah.
So out of love, the first action is to pray for revelation, for enlightenment, and for guidance.
Yeah.
And for that particular person, because their formation, as they grew from childhood to adulthood, and the information that they were given by the culture and even by some members of the church, wasn't clear.
That's true. Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. That's a wonderful point, and I think can't be stressed enough. Part of the danger, and I've talked about this before, but part of the danger in situations like this, and this is a part of the enemy's tool as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Part of the danger is that when faced with these sorts of attacks, we flee to an extreme for safety, for some sort of support. Unfortunately, that extreme is also wrong in certain issues. And so when the winds change, all of a sudden we find ourselves surrounded by ideas and notions which are also against the Catholic Church's social teaching. So we have to be careful, which is why, as we've said many times in this program, which is precisely why we have to root our Catholic social teaching in the kind of spiritual discernment that Father Timothy Gallagher talks about, rooted in a real relationship with Christ and the ability to discern what's life-giving and what isn't. Because the enemy will try to make us afraid and will try to make us make decisions based out of fear instead of resting in the confidence of the mercy of God.
Having said that, once we do rest in God, and we are at peace with what we know to be truth because of that revelation and because of the church's support and teaching and encouragement to continue onward, then we are called to action.
Yes, absolutely.
To look at the situation, to judge it with that criteria, and then to act.
Yes.
And that action in this particular case is to...
There are a number of things you can do. The U.S. bishops are asking us wonderfully to contact our local representatives. So that means our representative in the House, our congressperson, as well as our senator, the senators from our state, all three of those persons, in order to try to make sure that they know what your stance is on these issues. But there's also another very concrete thing you can do called the Respect for Conscience Rights Act. And so there's a positive thing when we call up your representative and say, you know, we're against this particular rule of the Health and Human Services. We're against this attack against the Catholic Church by the Obama administration. But we're for this particular act by Jeff Fortenberry of Lincoln's Nebraska's First District for the respect of consciences, not just for doctors, right, and for pharmacists and for teachers in Catholic schools and the Catholic Church also, but also for Catholic medical students and all those who find themselves, especially in the medical field, forced to do things against their conscience, against their will, and to respect that and to recognize the religious freedom of those folks.
Again, that articulation of terms in this particular case, the funding of not just a contraception methodology. Some would say that abstinence training, that's a valid form of contraception.
Yeah.
I keep emphasizing that because it's preventing conception.
Yeah.
But in this particular ruling, it allows for the treatment, quote-unquote, of what happens after conception, when a fertilized egg, which we understand in all terms is a human person, is chemically ejected from the woman's womb, also known as abortion, abortifacia, that any type of culpability on our part, and in this particular case, it would be allowing the funds for that to occur, is a violation of our conscience.
Yeah, we're being asked to pay for that. We're being asked with our money donated, right, to the Catholic Church, money given for the sake of the education of our children. And let's be clear here, too, we should probably mention there is a religious exemption. The rule from the HHS allowed for religious exemption, but that exemption is so narrow that it's not really practical. So what is that exemption? It requires that the religious institution that's asking for this exemption from this rule, that it exists to primarily inculcate or spread the faith. And then secondly, that the people it hires in fulfilling its particular mission be of that faith. So a Catholic parish would probably meet the exemption because it exists to preach the gospel. That's what it does. And the people it hires, with the exception of maybe some janitorial folks, are Catholic. You know, I don't think there are any non-Catholic DREs out there. If there are, there probably shouldn't be, right? But in the case of Catholic schools, the purpose isn't primarily to, or just only to spread the faith, but also to teach English and math and social studies and all sorts of things. And they do hire, actually, non-Catholics to teach some of these other subjects, especially at Catholic high schools. So the vast majority of Catholic schools and Catholic universities in particular would not qualify under this exemption. Furthermore, hospitals would not qualify. Why? Because they treat non-Catholics, because they have many non-Catholics working there, and because the main purpose of a Catholic hospital isn't to inculcate the faith. To which then the bishops say, right, even Jesus wouldn't meet this particular exemption, because Jesus didn't limit his gospel message to Jews, right, or didn't limit his gospel message to people of a specific faith. But he included it for everybody and accepted everybody and invited everybody. And that's the model the Catholic Church is following, but it's not a model that the government decides to recognize as valid. And so, as the bishops have said, under this particular rule, even Jesus wouldn't pass the muster.
Mm. Is there something specific that can be done in this particular clause that can clearly meet the needs of those who would have this particular objection?
To my knowledge, there's nothing that can be done about this particular rule to salvage it, with the exception of broadening the exemptions for conscience. That's the only way I think you can fix this rule. But your question raises a more fundamental question. That is, should the federal government, and particularly one person in the federal government, the secretary for the HHS, should they have this kind of power? Should they have this kind of authority to determine for all private insurance companies in the entire country what procedures they can and cannot cover, particularly when there are so many moral dangers and obstacles that we have to take in consideration? Moral dangers that change from faith to faith, person to person, conscience to conscience. Is that wise? And that's, I think, a more fundamental question that Catholics have to ask themselves. It's part of the wisdom of this whole health care plan from the Obama administration, which provides this kind of power to the Secretary of Health and Human Services.
This is one of those instances where the state is taking on the role of determining the common good. The church would indicate that it would be better served in limiting that down to the principle of subsidiarity.
That's right. Yeah, this is. I think that's why we bring this up, is the wisdom or lack thereof of this particular power given to the secretary goes to this principle of subsidiarity. Is it wise to give some one person who oversees so many different cultures, and we do have different cultures here in the United States, from North and South and the West Coast and the Midwest, from state to state even, so many different cultures, so many backgrounds, that we have a great, beautiful melting pot, you know, a melting pot. We have so many different people here, and that's beautiful, so many different faiths, and that's a wonderful thing. So for that very reason, is it wise, right, for the federal government to be making such broad rules for so many different kinds of consciences and faiths and positions? The church would say probably not. It's best probably to allow local institutions to do that.
to bring this all around, this is one specific case that has been lifted up as one that needs to be discerned and educated and brought forward in the discussions now by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. But it also is one small piece of the greater issue of religious liberty. And that is something that for Catholics, we really need to get a grasp on what's happening.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about Catholic social teaching, we often talk about things like just wage and just war and the various principles of subsidiarity and common good, etc. Religious liberty, especially for American senses, you know, it's the less sexy of the issues. You know, it kind of gets left in the background, and we consider religious liberty to be something that's dealt with in other countries, in the Middle East, or in the Christians that are persecuted in China, or in other things. And now it's sort of coming home to roost for us here. We're seeing the result of our secular culture as it's being implemented from the state, from the top down. But religious liberty has always been something that's sort of been near and dear to my heart. I wrote my master's thesis on this issue of religious liberty because it was a huge problem of the Second Vatican Council. And the Second Vatican Council took it up precisely because of America. It was American bishops and American theologians who pressed the bishops of the Second Vatican Council to take up this issue of religious liberty and to speak about it, because it was being talked about by very many people. The church was being accused of not really caring about religious liberty. The UN and its Charter of Rights had talked about religious liberty, but the church still hadn't said anything about it. And so it was America. It was us, with a couple of the Eastern Bloc bishops, like Karol Wojtyła, the future John Paul II, but mostly American bishops who came forward saying, we need something on religious liberty. The church needs to say something. Let's take this opportunity, the Second Vatican Council, to do it. And so they did. It's the shortest of the documents, but you know what? It was also the most controversial. It had the most drafts of any of the single documents at the Second Vatican Council. And this document came out, Dignitatis Humanae, the dignity of the human person. That was the opening words of this document. The dignity of the human person requires religious liberty. Religious liberty goes to the very heart of what we believe the Catholic social teaching to be about. And the Vatican Fathers understood this, which is why they spent so much time and so much effort and argued so much about it. And to this day, it's still considered very controversial in certain circles. But the vast majority of bishops voted for it overwhelmingly, because we recognize that the very heart of our relationship with our governments and relationship with each other, there has to be that kind of sacrosanct place, that freedom in conscience of worshiping the God whom we so dearly love. That's a right of the human person. And it goes along with the responsibility to preach the truth and to stand up for it. And so we meet here, Chris, once again, to talk to our listeners and to tell them, you know, it's time to stand up. It's time to recognize our obligation. It's time to tell the truth and to speak out in confidence about our rights as human persons and our fundamental human dignity.
Mm, beautiful. Yeah, the tendency I know for myself, that the easier thing for me to do would to bury myself and be content to remain ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do that in these days.
No, the time is over for that, if it was ever here in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. The time is to stand up as the wonderful examples of the Christians of old, as the great bishop St. Athanasius or St. Perpetua or St. Thomas More, the patron of politicians and lawyers. Let's pray to these good and holy people. And remember, too, and wonderful examples like St. Francis de Sales. St. Francis de Sales, who said to do all things in charity, that the measure of love is to love without measure. So let's stand up and truth and fight, but do it in the wonderful, beautiful Christian charity that converted so many souls.
Yeah, the goal of solidarity is that we all get to heaven.
Yeah, that's
so we
right.
pray. We pray first and foremost that
pray
the scales,
first. Yes, exactly.
Yes, that the scales be dropped off all of our eyes,
yes.
And that our hearts, all of our hearts, are open,
yes.
to the truth,
yeah.
And then that we all go together. So to love them into heaven, not to kick them in,
yeah,
but
right.
to love them to get there.
Amen.
So
Amen.
Thank you, Omar.
You're most welcome.
You've been listening to Regnum Novum, bringing forth the new evangelization through Catholic social teaching with Omar Gutierrez. To hear and or download this episode, along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com, I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join us next time for Regnum Novum, bringing forth the new evangelization through Catholic social teaching with Omar Gutierrez.